It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
The guest segment on Rangers Today Baseball Podcast is brought to you all season by our good friends at AAA Round Rock. Go see the Express beginning next week on the 9th through the 15th. They'll be home against Oklahoma City, the Dodgers affiliate. Always a good little club that the Dodgers put at AAA. These might be the two best teams, really, in the Pacific Coastal League. So, Tuesday, $2 tacos. Wednesday, the 10th, $1 hot dogs. 11th, it is Austin Black Senators night. The 12th, Friday, fireworks. The 13th, Saturday, Express short sleeve hoodie giveaway. And then on Sunday, it is the Malmo Oat Milkers Day. I'm not sure what's going on there, but I have a feeling a cow is going to get milked. So anyway, go to MLB.com/round-rock. I was trying to think of the right word. MLB.com/round-rock for more information. Get some tickets. Go out and see our guys at Dell Diamond, and they'll be with us all year. So thanks to Round Rock.
All right, guys, and joining us right now from Wichita, where the Frisco Rough Riders are about to take on the Shockers. That's the Wichita State.
Wind Surge.
It's Avery Williams, Texas Rangers left-handed pitcher. Avery, what's going on, buddy?
Good morning, guys. I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Looks like you're staying in a classic Wichita hotel.
It's a really nice hotel, actually. Good memories in this hotel. We won it back in 22, and went and like partied as a team in the clubhouse, and then came back to the hotel, ate some good food, and good memories here. So it's always a good stay being here, and just glad to be back.
Yeah. All right. You are back. You dealt with the Tommy John surgery. And when I talked to you at spring training, it didn't sound like your ordinary Tommy John injury, because you'd had it for a while. Am I remembering this correctly?
Yeah, it's a like weird situation. But so originally I had felt like a cramping sensation in 23 going into spring training. I had a big league invite.
Right.
And so leading up to that, I was throwing bullpens. And there was a cold snap in one of the weeks leading up, I think late January, early February. We were throwing in the bullpen, or we were throwing in the cage bullpens, and my forearm just felt really tight, which isn't normal for any pitcher. They'll tell you like it usually loosens up, whatever. And, you know, I was about 20, 25 pitches in, and it just wasn't loosening up. So I cut my bullpen short, and like they did all their testing, like to see if I was a candidate for Tommy John, and I had no pain on any of their tests or anything like that. So we weren't really worried about it. So I continued to go through my regular routine to get ready to throw off the mound next week. Played catch the next day, didn't have any issues. And then next week I get back off the mound for my next bullpen. And I feel the same sensation after about like pitch 11 or 12. So I knew something wasn't right. And it wasn't like a dire pain of like, hey, like I think I tore something, right. But it wasn't comfortable. And with the big league non-roster invite, like I was just like, hey, like I just want to get some imaging to make sure like everything's okay. And if you tell me everything's okay, like I'll pitch through it, no problem. Yeah. But like just something isn't right. Well, so then I went to go get my MRI, and it came back that I was told at first that it was like a grade 1+ tear. Okay. So then they set me up on a call with Meister. And Meister gave me a call, and me and him were talking about it. And he said, actually, it looks like it's a grade two tear. So he's like, I'm going to fly you out to Dallas, and like, we'll talk about your options and like what you want to do and how you want to go about it. So the next week I flew out to TMI and I did all that stuff and talked to Meister, and he sat me down and he draws on the white, like the whiteboard of what your UCL looks like. And then he brings up your MRI, and then he has a model elbow there.
Okay.
So as he's explaining my MRI to me, he was telling me like the white is the fluid and that's where the tear is and stuff like that. But he also points out like this bone, and I think it's called like your medial epicondyle. And he was all like, right, that bone is longer than it should be. He was like, and I mean by millimeters. He was, and he said, there's a bunch of scar tissue in there. So that tells me that, you've heard it before. I can't tell you how bad you've heard it, but like, people, when they heal themselves, they either build muscle, they build tissue, or they build bone. And I guess I'm one of the people that build bone. So that's how he knew that, like, I had heard it before, because that bone was longer than it should have been. And if you would have told me, he asked me when I heard it, and I couldn't tell him. I was like, I don't remember. But if you would have told me to like put my arm out straight, like my arm would go out straight, but my hand would always be kind of like cocked. And it just started back when I was in college, and I never really thought anything of it. And so fast forward, we decided to get the surgery. It wasn't a grade two tear. It ended up being a grade three tear. Oh. So he did full reconstruction. The UCL itself wasn't torn. It was just torn off the bone. So he cleaned all that up. He took out that little extra bone, reattached my old UCL back to the bone, and then he put the brace in, and then he took the Gracilis from my right leg and put that over top. So I got like three like backups of security, so to say. So
UCLs.
he did a really good job, and it feels really good, and it feels really strong. I had woke up from surgery though, and funny enough, like still off the anesthesia, I remembered when I heard it, and I was in junior college my freshman year. And what happened was, is we were in the fall of my freshman year at junior college, and I was pitching against a Japanese team, and I had pitched like four innings, and in the bottom of the fourth, that team, actually that year we ended up winning the National Junior College World Series, so we could hit a little bit.
Yeah.
And we scored like 20 runs in the bottom of the fourth, and I was like warming up during pitching changes and mound visits and just trying to stay warm. Well, I went out for the fifth, threw my warm-ups just fine, and then I went out, or then I threw to my first batter. And when I threw to my first batter, I felt that deep cramping sensation, but it was more pain.
Okay.
And like me being 17, 18 years old, like I thought my career was over. I thought it was Tommy John. turns out it was. But I didn't know that at the time. And the trainers there had told me like, no, it's just a flexor. Like you're just pointing at like your flexor tendon.
Yeah.
Well, I woke up the next day and I had complete loss of range of motion, either extension and flexion. And they're junior college. They weren't going to get me an MRI or anything like that. So, and what they had told me, the trainers, they said that it was, your flexor had tightened up to protect your elbow. That's why you lost range of motion. And we're going to shut you down for 2 weeks. And then we're going to continue like a throwing program. And then by the end of winter or like fall, you'll throw in like another inning or two before you go home. So for me being 17, 18, I was like, that sounds good. It all like sounds good to me. I didn't get any second opinions or anything like that.
Yeah.
I remember specifically being like in my college dorm room, getting the shower as hot as I could. And like, we do these things called nerve glides. And I'd put my hand like on the shower and turn my head away and like just try and extend it. And by the end of the shower, like I would have it straight. And then the next day, like I would just have a little bit more range, but like it would go back to like having no range at all. So then I went home for winter break and I was throwing bullpens at my former high school and I'm throwing stuff like off the walls of the gym. And I was never like that before, but like, I didn't know what was going on, but I was dealing with a lot of like discomfort and pain and just trying to throw through it. And, you know, I did that from literally that time in junior college to last year. And it's wild to me that I was able to compensate that much for that long a time and it hold up as long as it did.
Yeah, so we're talking what, 7 years?
Yeah, like 2016.
Yeah.
Actually, so it was fall, so it was still 2015 to 2023.
Man, good Lord. That's quite a story.
And it actually opened up my eyes a lot in the grand scheme of things, looking back at a lot of my baseball career, because I've always known I was a good pitcher. I've always known that I had good stuff, but I had dealt with like a lot of anxiety and a lot of self-doubt, especially when it came to like throwing or just even playing catch. Like I would just overthrow my catch play partner a lot. And like, I was never like that growing up. And I wasn't like that. Like my first couple weeks in junior college, like I was throwing lights out. My first outing is like when I got the offer to go to U of A. So for me to all of a sudden just be spraying and all over the place, like I didn't know what was going on, but now I look back at everything that had happened and I look back at my time at U of A and how I pitched there and I didn't perform the way that I wanted to and like what I dealt with. And like I would have good streaks in the minors, but then all of a sudden like everything would change. And a lot of it I think had to do with that like anxiety, that self-doubt, just because like there was no confidence in any of my throws of like where it was going. Okay. So looking back, like the whole rehab process, I think that helped me go about the rehab process in a better way, in a better mindset, knowing that I'm going to come out on the better side of things. And that I would never have to deal with any of that anymore. So it was a long road, crazy story, but
now you feel great. You know?
Yes. Now I feel great.
And you're never going to throw another ball or wild pitch.
No, I will. That was one of the things that they taught me in rehab. You know, I changed my arm motion a little bit. So now I have an actual like arm motion again and stuff. And it's a lot more repeatable, a lot more consistent. But, you know, like going through the whole process and they say like your first year back from TJ, like you're still kind of getting used to that arm and everything like that. So there's going to be like learning curves along the way. But where I'm at mentally and physically, I feel really good. And that's one thing that like Tommy and Lugo from the rehab side of throwing, like they've never seen a perfect game of catch play. They've never seen like even in a perfect game, somebody doesn't throw a ball or miss a spot, you know? So like it's going to happen. Yeah. So just take it with a grain of salt and just enjoy the game and enjoy being healthy. It really opens up your eyes when the game's taken away from you, just to like enjoy the game, even on the bad days that like, and there's going to be bad days, even on the bad days on the mound, like it's still a good day because I'm healthy and I got to touch the mound and I still got to play a kid's game, you know?
Sure.
Where's the velo?
I think velo hasn't come back all the way yet. I've been 91, 93, but in two of my spring training outings, I was 93-95. It's a little inconsistent as far as like being there consistently, but I think it's, I'm not worried about it coming back at all, but all my stuff has like upticked in movement and just pitch quality. So I feel really good like where I'm at, and the more I throw and the more comfortable I get with this new arm and being off the mound, I think the velo will come on its own.
Sure. So when you get a new arm stroke or new arm slot, like you're talking about, is it like learning how to ride a bike again because you were doing the old one for so long, or
it took a little bit of work. If you see me like around the field, I carry this little towel around with me. And it's not necessarily a new arm path. Like I still have the same arm. Sorry. I still have the same arm. I still have the same arm slot.
Okay.
But the arm path is different. So instead of being kind of herky jerky and like going straight into scap load and then just like being really aggressive, flipping up and like just trying to throw it as hard as I can.
Yeah.
I have an actual arm path where it looks like I'm actually a baseball player and like and can pitch a little bit, you know? So, it did take some work, you know, and the whole rehab process leading up to the throwing portion, like you don't just go straight into throwing, which I love. You go into plyos first off of a trampoline, really light, just to get the arm to test the elbow, to test like to get the motion and just all other kinds of things. And then you go into, I can't remember if it's, I think it's towel drills. So that same towel that I hold around, I got it from the towel drill portion. And my cue is kind of taking the back of my hand to the sky, not necessarily like pinching my scaps or anything anymore. It's just taking the back of my hand to the sky, and that gives me my arm path, and then everything falls through on its own. And then you go into sock drill, and like that gets you ready to throw. That puts a ball in your hand for the first time, and like, yeah, you're throwing into a sock, but it's nice to like feel a ball in your hand and kind of work on what you did in the towel drill, but now you with a ball. And then when you, right before you throw, like Tommy has you throw it into a net, like he'll stand on the outside of the net in the cage and you'll like pretend throw it to him, throw it into a net so you can like get that visual of throwing to somebody for the first time. And then you go to playing catch, and like it, even the whole throwing program process, like there were still days where it felt like I'm going back to like old habits. And then look at video and we would be like, no, you're good. Like, I know it feels that way, but you're not. And you just got to like trust that the work that you're putting in and the reps over time that you're doing for like this new arm path, like trust it. And once you start to trust things and you start to trust the process that the work that you're putting in, is for the better, like it comes on its own.
And it's a tedious process. I mean, you start at like Jacob DeGrom started at 45 feet and it was 25 throws, two or three times a week, then 50, then 75. And then you move back and you do the same thing. I think he's at 75 right now. So, I mean, it's,
yes,
it takes a while.
I think the major league, progression might be a little bit different.
Okay.
And this is, don't quote me on this. I don't think it's his first TJ, so they might be taking it a little slower. I started at 60 feet.
Okay.
Like I did all that throwing, like all that prep work before. So I did like plyos, then I did towel drill, then I did sock drill, and I think it's pretty much 2 weeks at each of those things. So it's 6 weeks of prep work getting ready to throw your first ball. And then we play catch and it's 25 throws your first time, but it, so the way that like the well my throwing program was, it was Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 60 feet, 25 throws, one set. And then the next week would be 60 feet, two sets of 25 throws. And then the third week would be three sets of 25 throws at 60 feet. Yeah. So, like, you're getting all these reps, and then you would move back. That fourth week, you would move back to 75. And then you would do the same process at 75. You do the same process at 90, 105. And 105 is your last time that you do three sets. And then when you go back to 120, you do 1 week out, one set of 25, and then two sets of 25, or sorry, two sets at 120 of 25 throws. And then that third week, we do something called a hat drill, and it's kind of just putting that stress on that elbow, and you're pulling down, and you're trying to throw it. Throw it as hard as you can is a bad way to describe it, but like you're getting after it, throwing it at the hat, and you're working on like your command, so to say, trying to hit the hat and pull it down at the same time, just so that like you're stressing that elbow. You're trying to get it used to that higher intensity. And then once you do that, you get about a 2 week deload. Well, 1 week, and then the next week, like you're playing light catch again, and then you build back up for your mount progression. So it is a long and tedious process, but you know, they, that whole rehab staff, they made sure to take good care of, they take good care of all their athletes, position player, pitcher, anything, like, and they do such a great job over there. So it was good.
So I talked to Carlos Cardoza, your manager, the other day, Wednesday at the Frisco Media Day, and where we talked, and he mentioned you're going to start out in the bullpen. Multiple inning guy. How do you like that role?
You know, personally, whatever helps the team and whatever team I'm on and gives them the best chance to win, I'm fine with it. I loved starting, and I still do love starting, and hopefully one day I can transition back. But, you know, I sat down with Ross, Bonnie, Teagues, Nappy, before going into spring training, and coming back from TJ, like if I would have chose the starter route, like kind of would have been crossing my name off the list all year, and like it would have been a long build-up process. I probably would still be in Arizona if that was the case, like building up innings and stuff like that. And then I mean, they have a whole rotation up in the big leagues right now, so I probably wouldn't even sniff it, because to be a starter and not have any like big league time or not be an established big leaguer, they're not going to be like, oh, Weems has got two innings and then we got to burn the bullpen the rest of the game. Like, they're not going to do that in the big leagues, you know?
Yeah.
So I think their thought process was like, if I had the chance this year, possibly, maybe, the best chance would to be a reliever and throw one, two, maybe three, four innings at a time, depending on what I build up to. And I've always been told that my stuff would play better out of the bullpen. And I think that's true. But I also think that, like, you know, I'm a hard worker, I'm a quick learner, and I think ultimately, like, I would love to transition back into a starter maybe one day. And there's a lot of people, when I sat down with Ross and them, like that was one of the things that I said, and he said, absolutely. And he stopped me and he named off a bunch of guys that broke into the league as relievers. And now they are established starters in the big leagues. So nothing is out of the question, but, I'm happy with where I'm at, like mentally, physically going into the season, and everything else will fall into place and it'll take care of its own. Like, I just got to focus and keep doing what I'm doing and hopefully get there. You know, that's the ultimate goal.
Sure. Before I hand you over to John for his, less baseball-y questions. You were at game 5 of the World Series. You were in
Yes,
Arizona
I was.
rehabbing. Your good buddy Cody Bradford got you some tickets.
He did. He did.
What was that like for you to be at that game?
Bittersweet, you know. I think it was, and I won't lie. It was bittersweet. I thought about how I really wanted to be there, and that I really had a chance that past year to be there. Of course, if I was healthy, you know. But I, more importantly, I was just happy for those guys. I would have loved to have been a part of history and been part of Texas's first World Series, you know. Mm-hmm. And especially, the only thing I could think of is I was like, man, if I was here, I was like, of course it's an AZ. I was like, you know how many people I would have here cheering for me? Like, that would have been like a storybook thing to have, like, my first year in the big leagues in AZ. And right. I may not have made it. I don't know. Like, that's totally, like, I don't, like, I may not have made it that year. So.
Sure.
To say that, but you know, like we always like to think positively, and
of course, yeah, you would have been the starter. let's think positive here, Avery.
I don't know about that, but you know, like just to even been a part of that team, been a part of like that locker room and stuff, and then, like to think about like that's like storybook stuff of like, man, I would have had all my family and friends and. Whatever, and that would have been like one of the coolest experiences of my life. But you know, God has a plan, and whatever His plan is, and whatever His timing is, like I'm good with it.
All right,
It was Cody Bradford got me the tickets, and it was cool to see them like go and do what they did, and like see them get the trophy and talk, and couldn't be happier for them. Thanks to him, like I got to see him win it and be there, and it was a cool experience.
Nice. All right. So the way our show works is I ask the hard hitting baseball questions, and then John lightens the mood. Not that it's been at all tense. So have at it, John.
All right. So you seem emotional, and I love that. I love that you seem so excited to be back, and I'm really proud of you, Avery. We've talked to you a few times, spring training, but now we're gonna get to know Avery. So you're from Flagstaff, Arizona. You went to Coconino. Is that how you say that?
Yeah, Coconino.
Coconino High School. Did you play any other sports when you were in high school?
Not when I was in high school, but I played basketball growing up my entire time. And then we moved into Phoenix going into my freshman year of high school. And I went to Millennium for 3 years down in Goodyear by the Wigwam. And,
oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so my dad got a job out at Palo Verde Power Plant in Tonopah. So I went to Millennium for 3 years, and then I pitched. I played over there. I played well. We got a new coach my junior year, going into my junior year, and, you know, me and him really didn't see eye to eye. So I said, at least if I'm going to enjoy my last year, like I want to enjoy it with all the boys that I grew up playing with. And my parents went to Coconino. And I had always dreamt about going to Coconino. Like, Flagstaff was a small, like, blue-collar town growing up, and it's not like that anymore, but that's what it was. And, like, they're full of tradition and stuff. And, like, if your parents went to Coconino, you went to Coconino. If, like, your parents went to Flag High, you went to Flag High. There's a big rivalry, you know, and it's not quite like that anymore. But, you know, that's kind of how I grew up. So I went back to play at Coconino my senior year and play for Daniel Vanderbach, one of the best coaches that I'd ever had. Still talk to him, still keep up to him to this day. He's down in Chandler now coaching the Chandler Wolves. I went to Coconino, finished my senior year. And then after that, I went and played 2 years at Yavapai Junior College, won the national championship, the junior college championship. In Grand Junction, Colorado, my freshman year. And then played 2 years at the University of Arizona. And then got drafted in 2019 by the Chicago White Sox.
So hang on. Yavapai produces talent. Yavapai has always had good players. And the two who come to mind are...
Kirby Yates.
Well, I was thinking more Rangers. But Willie Calhoun went to school there.
Yeah.
And I think Ian Kinsler spent a year there between
the junior college,
Arizona and Arizona State, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're loaded.
Now, let me ask you this. So you ended up going to junior college. Were you recruited out of high school? Did you have any other like four-year school opportunities?
Actually, no. And it was surprising to me, but you know, I had South Mountain Community College. I had Yavapai Community College, and so I had committed to Yavapai, and then I played my senior summer. We do a tournament in Albuquerque every year. Well, I threw in the first game, and I threw really well. I threw like 7 innings or whatever, and the UNM coach had actually heard about me. So the next day, he wanted me to throw a bullpen for him. And I had already thrown like 7 innings, but you know, I was like, why not? So I threw a bullpen for him. I was like 88 in the bullpen. He was like, yeah, I don't think that's a true 88. And he actually really tried to recruit me, like after that for the first couple weeks before I headed out to Yavapai. And, you know, I thought about it. I thought really hard about it, but my heart was kind of set on Yavapai and whatever. I knew that they had a good program, and like Kurt Schillings went there. My uncle went there. Kirby Yates, like Rick Kranitz was there, you know? And so there's just a lot of people that went there that I knew they had a good program, and I knew I could flourish there.
All right. Hey, before we go on, Avery, can you get your face a little more on the screen?
There you go.
Yeah, sorry.
All right. No, good. Yeah,
you're good. Don't worry about it. This will be part of this is the charm of the show. Okay. So you're drafted in the sixth round in 2019. You're drafted out of the University of Arizona in the sixth round by the Chicago White Sox. I mean, so I'm guessing you weren't in New York City for the draft that year, having it going. How did you find out you'd been drafted?
John Kazanis. He was my scout. He had always taken a liking to me, back even when I was at Yavapai. And we had created a good relationship. And, like, he had put my name in the draft even when I was at Yavapai. And then when I went to U of A, like, I didn't quite have the numbers that I wanted. Turns out I was dealing with Tommy John, and I didn't even know. But, so, like, didn't have the numbers that I wanted. It was a tough, like, me and that coaching staff didn't really, like, connect very well. So it was a really tough time for me. Being there, but you know, like since the relationship that we created, and I always talked to him, and he had always seen me throw, and he just had a lot of belief in me, and he knew that I could possibly turn into something. So I owe it all to him to vouching for me in the room and saying, "Hey, we need to draft this guy," and you know, like he's part of the reason why I'm at where I'm at today. So all because of him, like I'm now in professional baseball and in the Texas organization. So
and this is another one we got to ask, because getting into the Texas organization, you were a part of the Lance Lynn Dane Dunning trade. People don't remember. Avery Weems was part of that trade that came over from the White Sox. Now, how do you find out you're traded? Now, this is during the offseason. Who called you and told you that?
That's a funny story. I was actually in Puerto Rico at the time because I was playing in the Puerto Rican Winter League. One of my best friends, he's from Puerto Rico, and he had actually hooked me up to go play there over COVID. And this was like technically like my first full year of pro ball, and like it was all during COVID. Yeah. And like not a lot of guys where their first full year, like, do they go play winter ball? Like, that's usually like kind of down the road. But he hooked me up to go play over there with him. And we were about to open up in Mayagüez, and we were staying in like downtown Mayagüez. And I woke up early for whatever reason, and I checked my phone and I had seen all these tweets like, you're traded, blah, blah, blah. Like my agent had texted. And this is like 2 or 3 in the morning, Puerto Rican time. So like the trade had happened at like midnight. So my agent's like, he had called me, texted me. He was like, hey, when you wake up, give me a call, whatever. And so then like I'm sitting there and then I like ran into my best friend's room. I was like, bro, I just got traded. And like, he was mad that I woke him up. He was like, what do you mean you got traded? And he was like, who'd you get traded for? I was like, Lance Lynn. He was like, big leaguer. He was like, you're good. You got traded for a like good cause. And he was like, go back to sleep. So then I went back to sleep. And then I talked to everybody and can't remember who the first person that called me was. I mean, I called Kazanis and I called my agent. I called my parents, told them everything. And then I think the first person to call me was Todd Walters, maybe, or I think CY called me first. And then after that, it was like Todd Walters and who else? I think Mike Daly.
Daly, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that was, I mean, that was like Chris Young's like first week on the job.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
They also did the Nate Lowe trade right around that same time. And everybody was excited. Oh, look, Chris Young's already in there making trades. It's like, no, these things take forever. Chris Young was not. He might have helped a little bit on the back end, but the legwork had been done. But I remember both of those.
And it was really funny because actually I had gone on a podcast with the Chicago White Sox who wanted Lance Lynn. So they wanted to work out a trade with a podcaster here in Dallas. And I immediately, first thing I said was, okay, I'll give you Lance Lynn straight up for Dane Dunning. That was my trade right there. They turned it down. And I was like, really? And I was like, okay, they said that wasn't good enough. And then when we got it, and we got Weems too, I was like, man, that's why I'm not a general manager, man. They just fleeced the White Sox. We got two good arms for Lance Lynn. And he was only going to be there that year. He was a free agent after that year, if you remember that.
Right, right.
All right, I'm going to get you last thing before we get out of here. We got a lot more questions, but we'll get you on again during the season.
Before the last one.
Absolutely.
You're getting married in November.
Yes.
On November 15th.
Yes.
Which is his fiance's birthday.
Yep.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Hey, I got a daughter born on Valentine's Day. That's going to be an expensive day the rest of your life, Bubba.
Crazy stories. I'm full of crazy stories. Yeah.
So you guys are going to get married in Flagstaff or
where are you? Queen Creek, Arizona. Okay. It's called Schnepp Farms, and it didn't originally work out like supposed to be work out like that. We were supposed to go look at the meadow there because we both have pretty big families, and then we just wanted kind of like a big wedding, so. This place was the only place that could, like, we could afford having a big wedding. And we went and looked at the meadow. We loved it, whatever. And then we pulled up to the farmhouse because their offices were there. Well, we pull up. She's like, oh my gosh, I love it. And they were having a wedding there that day. So when I got out of the car, I told them, I said, like, how come we're not touring the farmhouse, or like, how come you didn't mention the farmhouse? And she was like, well, it's kind of booked out. And my fiance was like, ah, that sucks. Like, can you put us on some sort of cancellation list? She was like, yeah, actually, I think we had a cancellation for like a Friday in November. I was like, why wouldn't you just lead with that when like, if I asked if it was booked or not, you know, and we looked at the schedule and it ended up being on her birthday, and I was like, well, how do you feel about getting married on your birthday? And it's funny, she when we first started dating, she had told me she had had a bad history of birthdays. So when we got engaged, I had played off her birthday was during the week. I had played off like we were doing something the weekend before for her birthday, so it was a birthday weekend type of celebration. So we got engaged on the 11th for her birthday, because she didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
And then now we're getting married on her birthday. So now she has no more bad birthdays.
That's
there
awesome.
You go. That's incredible.
Well, my, you know, I remember because my sister's birthday Anthony Andro's wife, Diana, Jesse Sanchez, mm-hmm. the great MLB.com reporter, and then my best friend's aunt are all, they're all November 15th birthdays. So I'm always, I just, when you said that the other day, I was like, oh, well, that, and I even said, yeah, it's my sister's birthday. And he said, well, it's my fiance's birthday. I was like, what?
Yeah.
So that's cool. That's a, that's another cool story. You're, yeah, you are full of stories. We're going to have you on like all the time.
Yeah, we got a lot more things to ask. I'm going to ask you a last question is, we always ask this one. It's what's something that nobody knows about Avery Weems? Examples so that you'll know it. Jack Leiter told us, I don't know if you ever watched any of our shows, Jack Leiter hates peanut butter. That's a weird one. We've got the old general manager, John Daniels. He used to have what was called airplane underwear. He wore one pair of underwear every trip and then one pair back. So he said it's worked, still here. Yeah. So what is something nobody knows about? Oh, Davis Wenzel got his finger cut off when he was about 5 years old.
They got it sewed back on.
Got it sewed back on. We know that. What is something nobody knows about Avery Weems?
Man, that's a hard question.
I think Avery pretty much tells everybody everything.
I've heard, I got you. My first language was actually Spanish.
Oh. Really? So you're bilingual? Yeah.
No, I am not. My mom is full Mexican. I'm half. But growing up, my mom's parents spoke to all of them in Spanish, and they had to answer back in Spanish. Well, my mom is the second youngest. So, like, with the oldest, they were pretty strict with it, and the oldest is fluent. And then the second can understand it. My mom can understand it, and the youngest sister can understand it, but they can't speak it. So growing up, my nana watched me all the time, and she would speak to me in Spanish, and I would answer in Spanish. And then she passed away in 2005, so that would have made me 6, I think. So, yeah. And then once she passed away, like, my vocabulary was so small that, like, and I had nobody to practice with or anything, that I just didn't keep up with it. But my first language was Spanish. And
your first word was Spanish?
I think so. I'm pretty sure it was probably mama.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's universal.
He was 5 or 6years old. He was fluent in Spanish, and then nobody taught it to you. It just shows you. But when you're that age, they say when you're first learning, if you're learning two languages, you can learn two languages just like that. I mean, because that's the way you're banging.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, my fiance speaks Spanish, and her whole family speaks Spanish. So I'm hopefully, like, I can pick it up and start speaking Spanish again.
It'd be useful. You know,
yeah, and the kids,
you know how many
the kids will be able to speak it too.
How many Spanish speaking
absolutely
are in baseball? It'd be huge for you.
Absolutely,
it'd be huge for
absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely.
Hey, listen, Avery, we're gonna get you out of here. Had you on here a little longer than we're supposed to, but we've got Avery Weems on here, guy. We're gonna see. He's out in Frisco Rough Riders bullpen. Avery, we appreciate you taking the time to come down here and take time out of your day and talk to us. We'll be out at the ballpark a lot, so we'll see you out there. We always talk to you in spring training. Avery, thanks a lot, bud.
No, thank you, guys. I hope you guys have a good rest of your day, and I'm looking forward to being back on here one day. So thank you, guys.
We'll see you soon. Appreciate you, buddy.
Yep. That's Avery Weems.
Appreciate you, guys.
Left-handed pitcher for the Texas Rangers.